My name is Kim Eagle. I'm the editor-in-chief of ACC.org. We're delighted to provide you this podcast, which focuses on important clinical trials being presented at ACC 18 in Orlando. This podcast will focus on trials that we think are very relevant to your practice.
I'm Peter Block in Orlando, Florida, at the ACC annual meeting for On the Scene. With me to my far left is Tony DiMaria, and in the middle, Deepak Bhatt, both friends, and we've done this a number of times before. This is a wrap-up for day two for the clinical trials at the annual meeting. So, Tony, I'm going to start with you and Secure PCI, a study of atorvastatin in patients with acute coronary syndromes, whether or not you should give it quickly before they go off to the cath lab. Here, quick, take these pills. This is good or not?
And immediately thereafter.
Exactly.
Yeah, so there has been data in the past from previous studies that have indicated that acute administration of a high dose of a statin prior to a PCI would be of benefit. But these were small studies and largely in elective PCIs. So in Secure PCI, they tested the concept that in ACS, giving a high dose of 80 of atorvastatin immediately before and immediately after cardiac catheterization would in fact reduce MACE. And so the bottom line is the endpoint was negative. There really was no benefit to this. However, in a group of patients who had STEMIs and had PCI, in fact, there was a slight statistically significant benefit. And so in view of the fact that 30% of the patients in this study didn't undergo PCI, which would be unusual in the United States, the authors did say that they had some suggestion of a signal that if you applied it only to patients with PCI, it might in fact be beneficial.
Okay, so let me push you a little bit, because this is a little weird, right? Why would atorvastatin within 5 hours make a difference? I mean, we're talking about pleiotropic effects, that in fact it's anti-inflammatory. I mean, lowering LDL is not going to make a difference within a day. And so what do you think is going on?
Oh, for sure it's not the LDL lowering in that time frame, which is even less than 5 hours. It's got to be the pleiotropic effects, maybe release of nitric oxide. That's been shown. It's been shown that it's got an anti-inflammatory effect and probably some other effects we haven't seen. So that would be the concept, that it's the pleiotropic effects of the statins that have been shown in other settings that might be operative here.
So Deepak, let me ask you a question. I mean, yeah. If you were having an infarct, hopefully not. But you'd want to be started on
atorvastatin. Though if I were, I'd want to be sandwiched between you two guys.
That's a deal. So seriously, don't you think you'd want to be started on atorvastatin anyway, regardless?
Absolutely. I mean, the overall trial, you can say it was negative, but I agree with what Tony said. It looked like there was some action going on in the PCI patients. So it shows what I kind of want to believe, and older data had sort of supported it. Data that you published, I think, as editor, while you were editor of JACC.
Right.
So I sort of believe that getting statins because of the anti-inflammatory effect helps, and you're going to give them the 80 of atorvastatin or whatever statin you like anyway. What's the harm in giving it beforehand? So I would still do that statin
treatment.
I mean,
at the end of the day, you're going to start a patient with an infarct who's not taking atorvastatin as atorvastatin.
Right. And you know, Peter,
or rosuvastatin or whatever statin you like.
The older studies that show, like the Reload study, gave a high dose of atorva in patients who were already receiving statins. So these patients, although I couldn't find it in the paper, I think were largely virgin to statins as they came in.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to, having started that one, we're going to move on to males. Major adverse limb events. I love it. It's a wonderful acronym.
I hate that acronym.
This is the COMPASS trial. And the COMPASS trial actually was supported by Deepak is a large part of. So Deepak, I'm going to throw this one to you.
Sure. Yeah, no, I was one of the U.S. national coordinators for the trial. So COMPASS, if you recall, was a trial of very low dose for rivaroxaban plus aspirin versus aspirin alone in stable coronary and or peripheral artery disease. Overall trial was positive. lower mortality as well. So they look good. What this analysis did was specifically look at MALE, and I really don't like that acronym. In case you don't know what it stands for, it's major adverse limb events. So MALE is catching on as the term, but I really don't like it. But at any rate, what this analysis showed was that MALE predicts MACE, that is major adverse limb events, if you have something like an amputation or urgent revascularization for limb ischemia, your risk of future cardiovascular badness is much higher. Now, before you guys say it, because you're each waiting to jump in there and say, oh, isn't that something that's obvious or known? Well, yeah, I mean, it's been known that if you have peripheral artery disease that's symptomatic, you have a higher rate of MI and stroke, for example. But this study very nicely tied together future risk of things like cardiovascular death, but more importantly showed that therapy can modify those risks, i.e. combining a low-dose NOAC plus aspirin actually modifies that excess risk. That's the real contribution.
But you know, there's an interesting sort of association, which we've always known about, between peripheral arterial disease, vascular disease, and central cardiac disease.
Right.
And that's always been a little mysterious, hasn't it? I mean, when we started doing TAVRs, we really got into this business of anybody where we had trouble in the groin, where there was a lot of difficulty with vascular disease in the pelvis, we knew that their outcomes were not going to be as good.
Right.
And I'm not quite sure what the association is, whether one means that you're having sort of more high cholesterol, more badness, more inflammatory stuff running around that makes your heart worse, or whether there's some other genetic thing that pulls them together. What are your thoughts on that one?
Those are great questions, and the answer is yes to all those. That is, there are small studies that support any of those statements, that there's more arterial inflammation in PAD, that there might be more genetic sort of predispositions to it. Family history counts for PAD too, for example. I guess I've often thought of it in a much more simplistic plumber-like way. Maybe it's because I'm an interventional cardiologist, but you know, if you're plugging up your big iliac arteries, to me that means you're also clogging up your smaller diameter coronary and intracerebral vessels. So I think part of it might just be a plaque burden issue. If you have symptomatic, I'm not talking about asymptomatic, but symptomatic PAD, you know, you're really a plaque former.
Yeah. Although a lot of people with symptomatic PAD don't have any coronary disease too. There is that subgroup.
Well, it depends how hard you look. I don't know if you remember Norm Hertzler, the famed vascular surgeon from Cleveland Clinic, led a study where coronary angiography, invasive coronary angiography, was done in everybody getting vascular surgery. It was like a 90% plus rate of coronary artery disease.
Tony, your
peripheral
thoughts?
Peripheral disease is not a risk factor. It is the disease, and so it's not unexpected that if you have atherosclerosis somewhere else. So it's a bit like this study proving unequivocally that sicker patients do worse.
Yeah. Aside from having males, a major adverse limb event. I mean, if you
really like saying that, don't you?
I love it. I love it. I think it's a great, great acronym. So, if you have a major adverse limb event, then obviously you're at high risk. But suppose you just are diagnosed with peripheral arterial disease. Should you be on Rivarox and aspirin?
So that's a great question. In terms of what's FDA approved for PAD right now, there's clopidogrel and there's Vorapaxar. Aspirin is commonly used, although strictly speaking off-label. And this combination of very low-dose Rivaroxaban, 2.5 milligrams BID, much lower than the AFib
dose. We don't have that here, do we?
It's not available. Yeah. It's not FDA approved. But that dose in combination with aspirin, I thought looked really good in the COMPASS trial overall for CAD and or PAD patients. But specifically in the PAD, since we're talking about that, a reduction in MACE, but also a reduction in adverse limb events, including amputations. So, you know, a lower risk of amputation. So those of us in the PAD or vascular medicine world, that's really exciting. So I think, assuming it gets approved and that dose is available, I think vascular medicine doctors like me are going to use it.
Yeah, I was impressed by that as well. I mean, it really did seem to be effective. That's 1% of patients in COMPASS that actually were included in this sub-study. So we're talking about a relatively small population, but nevertheless, very effective in that population. And since COMPASS had, 28,000 patients?
Yeah, a little over 27,
Yeah, so that even 1% turns out to be pretty significant.
Okay, so let's move on very quickly. We only have about a minute left.
Oh,
so
okay.
HeartMate 2 versus HeartMate 3, a new study. Again, I'm going to ask Deepak about this because It is a major advance. Now, you would say, duh, because it's a newer, better, hotter, nicer, more slick device. So what are the outcomes of this trial?
I think it's really exciting, especially for doctors involved with heart failure and specifically mechanical support. It showed that the HeartMate 3 versus the HeartMate 2 was associated with significantly less stroke and need for reoperation. So those are big issues in LVAD patients. As you know, with the older devices, blood clots are very common. But with this newer device, because of some tweaking of its design, less likely to have clots, less likely to need to be reoperated, a trend towards less hemorrhagic stroke, less ischemic stroke. So overall, it looks pretty good. This is two-year follow-up. The mortality is numerically lower. You know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with longer-term follow-up, which is planned.
And you mentioned when we were talking before about the fact that this is getting close to transplant data.
That's a great point. So
for 2 years.
Yeah, for 2 years. We'll have to see longer-term. But for 2 years, it's approaching transplant. That's a big deal.
Yeah. I was impressed that LVADs clearly have prolonged life in these patients, but the quality has really often suffered by the multiple side effects, and these data seem to support the fact that not only do patients get longer life, but a higher quality of life, and I think that's really important.
Yeah, this new one has got a magnetically driven motor, which in fact really greatly minimizes any shear forces and so forth, and minimizes clot formation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that mechanical engineering really matters.
Okay, with that, we'll call it a day and a wrap up. Thank you, folks.
Thank you for listening to Eagle's Eye View. This has been your weekly update from ACC.org about clinical trials important for your practice, presented at ACC 18. Thank you.